Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, our weekly mix of science interviews and music. I'm Jorge Salazar, and here's a scientist soundbite.
In earlier times, the first police forces that humans had were called watchmen, and they didn't carry any arms with them or weapons. They had these large rattles that would make a clacking sound in the middle of the night to alert the citizens to danger, and it was really a summons for help. And so I wrote this book as a summons for help for those who are deeply concerned about problems that we have not solved for many generations to come to the aid of the sound of the watchman's rattle.
That was Rebecca Costa, author of The Watchman's Rattle. More with her later, but first, Science News of the Week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
A study of ancient rocks in Australia, combined with computer modeling of the early solar system, has led researchers to estimate that approximately 70 killer asteroids of the same size that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs, or larger, struck Earth 1.8 to 3.8 billion years ago. Scientists with NASA's Lunar Science Institute and international scientists published these results on April 25th in the journal Nature.
Discovery News is reporting that the source of the reports of loud booms and a bright fireball in the skies over Nevada and California on April 22nd has been confirmed as a small asteroid, minivan-sized, according to Ian O'Neill, who wrote Discovery's post. O'Neill said it slammed into Earth's atmosphere at a speed of 15 kilometers per second, or 33,500 miles per hour, turning into a fireball and delivering an energy of 3.8 kilotons of TNT as it broke up over California's Sierra Nevada mountains.
Planetary Resources Incorporated, a company founded this year with the stated goal of expanding Earth's natural resource base, announced on April 24th its plan to head out into the solar system to mine near-Earth asteroids for water and precious metals. The group said it will focus first on developing and selling low-cost robotic spacecraft to prospect among near-Earth asteroids. It expects to launch a demonstration mission to Earth orbit within 2 years.
Next time you need to choose between vegetable oil and margarine, think about your health and reach for the oil. Scientists at the Center for Cancer Prevention Research at Rutgers Ernesto Mario School of Pharmacy and the Cancer Institute of New Jersey believe that two forms of vitamin E, gamma and delta tocopherols, found in soybean, canola, and corn oils, as well as nuts, do prevent colon, lung, breast, and prostate cancers. The findings were published recently in the journal Cancer Prevention Research.
Have you ever gazed at both sides of your face in the mirror, trying to determine your best side? New research says you need gaze no more. The left side probably looks better. That's according to a new study released on April 20th. Researchers at Wake Forest University say their work shows that images of the left side of the face are perceived and rated as more pleasant than pictures of the right side. They suggest the difference might be due to a greater intensity of emotion exhibited on our left sides. Their work is published online in the journal Experimental Brain Research.
Mexico's Popocatépetl volcano is located between the Mexican states of Puebla and Morelos, about 43 miles southeast of Mexico City. According to NASA, many volcanologists consider it to be the planet's riskiest volcano. On the evening of April 16th, Mexico's Center for Disaster Prevention announced that Popocatépetl was set to erupt. The Associated Press reported on April 18th that Mexican authorities had moved alert levels to 5 on a 7-level scale for the areas surrounding Popocatépetl near Mexico City. On April 19th, there were reports of superheated rock fragments being hurled into the air by the 17,900-foot volcano. We'll keep you updated at earthsky.org. That's Science News of the Week. Thanks for listening. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. This week's Song of the Week is Me As In You. That's by Burgess Meredith, and it's off their excellent new EP, Banana Moon. We hope you enjoy.
Mountain goes round and round, spin like a six-year-old.
Rebecca Costa is the author of The Watchman's Rattle, which looks at signs of collapse in society today and in the past, and how the latest science on the human brain can help us. Ms. Costa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, what is the Watchman's Rattle that you write about in your book?
In earlier times, the first police forces that humans had were called watchmen, and they didn't carry any arms with them or weapons. They had these large rattles that would make a clacking sound in the middle of the night to alert the citizens to danger, and it was really a summons for help. And so I wrote this book as a summons for help for those who are deeply concerned about problems that we have not solved for many generations to come to the aid of the sound of the watchman's rattle.
So what kind of problems are you talking about here?
Well, I don't think it comes as any surprise to people that the same problems have been hanging around for many, many generations, and they're exponentially growing in terms of their size and their peril. We seem to be in some kind of gridlock where we just, despite all our technology and all our knowledge, don't seem to be able to get on top of these problems. The book is really divided into three sections. The first third is to look at earlier civilizations and see if there's any pattern of human behavior that occurred long before the actual incidents that's responsible for their collapse. In other words, I don't want to argue with historians whether the Mayans collapsed because of drought or warfare or pandemic virus. I don't think to the Mayans whose society fell apart it mattered. But what I was curious about was, were there ordinary Mayan citizens walking around saying, you know, our government doesn't seem to be able to solve the drought problem, and it seems to be getting worse one generation after another. And in fact, what I did discover was there were two early signs that a civilization was going into collapse. First, they became gridlocked and unable to solve their problems as their problems migrated from one generation to another, despite knowing those problems might do them in. And the second symptom was that the worse their situation got, the more they began to rely on beliefs as their way out, as opposed to rational methods that were fact-based and empirically based.
Yeah, I was hoping you might give us an example from The Watchman's Rattle of how science can be applied to solving a daunting problem that's been around for a while. Does something come to mind?
Well, let's use the definition of complexity that comes out of Harvard University. A complex environment is one in which the number of wrong choices is growing exponentially relative to the number of right choices. So when we're faced with a complex problem, the odds are stacking against us that we'll call the solution right. In an environment like that, we have to go look for models that are related to high failure rates. And the model I use in the book is the venture capital model. Many people don't know that venture capitalists are actually experts at failure, not experts at success. What I mean by that is for every 100 companies they invest in, they expect 90, 85 or 90 of them to not do well or fail completely. But in spite of those odds, they're able to be tremendously successful because those companies that succeed, the successes far dwarf and overwhelm the failures. So because of that, they're able to have a high failure rate model that's highly profitable and successful. In that same way, when we face a problem such as the Gulf oil spill, where it's chaotic and we need to take action right away, no amount of due diligence is going to improve our odds of calling the right solution. In fact, we called the wrong solution. At first, we dropped a concrete box on the hole, and then we waited 30 days and discovered that didn't work. And then we went to solution number two, which was to drill through the side and relieve some of the pressure. And that didn't work. And, you know, 60, 90 days out, we finally stumbled upon the static kill method. That trial and error is a form of problem solving, which we use to find lost luggage at the airport, doesn't work when we're dealing with a highly chaotic and dynamic model that's very, very complex. And so what we need to do is to deploy models like venture capital, where we hit it with everything. We should have gone after that problem in the Gulf oil spill with 50, 100 solutions and expected that maybe 80 or 90% of them would have failed, but the 10% that would have succeeded would have plugged the hole much more quickly than doing this through trial and error and allowing the clock to run out.
Yeah, and I was hoping you, Ms. Costa, you could tell us more about breakthroughs, which form a good part of your book, in talking about what goes on in the brain in breakthroughs and why that's important to the situation that everybody finds themselves in today.
When you think about it, we're the first civilization since man has walked the planet that's able to put a skull cap on a human being and watch what their brain is doing when they reach a complex problem that exceeds their capability. So we can watch our brains try to use left side problem thinking, which is very deconstructive. We start out with lots of solutions and we keep narrowing them down like a funnel till we get to one or two and then we pick one. Then we have the right side of the brain that uses more of a synthesis process. We use lots of clues and we connect the clues together to come up with a solution. But every now and again, when we hit a complex problem that's above the pay grade of left brain deconstructive thinking and right brain synthetic thinking, what we find is a little portion of the brain called the ASTG lights up like a Christmas tree, and we have a breakthrough, or what neuroscientists are calling an aha moment. And if you think about aha moments are legendary. They're the thing of folklore. We talk about an apple hitting Newton in the head, and suddenly he says, aha, okay, there's gravity. That explains a lot. Same with Archimedes when he got into the bathtub and the water spilled over the edges and he discovered displacement theory. So we know that this exists, but for some reason we thought it was sort of random and couldn't be controlled. And now what neuroscientists have recently discovered, and I'm only talking about in the last few years, I wish I could have written more about it in my book, is that all people have the ability to use insight to solve highly complex dynamic problems, and that insight seems to search through all the content in our brain and only connect those pieces of information that are relevant to solving the problem, and does it instantaneously. It's a fascinating process. And the most wonderful thing about the discovery is it seems to be a third form of powerful problem solving, ideally suited to complex problems.
That was Rebecca Costa, author of The Watchman's Rattle. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. Deborah Burr joins us now with news of the global night sky, a planet that will dazzle you. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. The planet Venus, it's the brightest planet. It's been in our evening sky for some time now. Wow, what an amazing apparition of Venus this has been. Recently, it's been near Jupiter, and, you know, people around the world have seen it, but Venus has some tricks up its sleeve left to show us.
Okay, so what should we be looking for with Venus?
Well, around the end of April 2012, Venus is going to be at its brightest. And astronomers used to call this a greatest brilliancy for Venus. I always used to think that, you know, greatest brilliancy was such a beautiful and romantic phrase. Actually, now they've taken to calling it the greatest illuminated extent for Venus, which has to do, it's a more technical sounding, has to do with looking at Venus through a telescope and how much of the disk of the planet you see, which is what determines when Venus is brightest.
Right. You won't need a telescope to see Venus, though.
Absolutely. Venus is the brightest planet, and all you have to do is look in the western sky after sunset in late April. The exact date is April 29th, when Venus will be at its very, very brightest. It's cool to see Venus around the time that it's brightest, because then the planet is about to pass between the Earth and Sun, which it's going to do this year around June 5th and 6th. And in fact, when Venus does pass between the Earth and Sun on June 5th and 6th, it's actually going to cross the face of the Sun in an amazing transit of Venus for the last time in this century. And if you're interested in that, we have an article about that at earthsky.org, so you can come and search for Transit of Venus and find out about the transit. But before that transit on June 5th, 6th, in late April, we're going to see Venus at its brightest. It's getting ready to pass between the Earth and Sun. So if you can imagine, you know, Venus and the Earth as if they're on a racetrack and the Sun is in the middle of the racetrack, Venus is on an inside track going around the Sun. Earth is on the, it's on the second track. Earth is on the third track. And Venus is about to gain a lap on us as it goes around the Sun. So Venus and Earth are almost neck and neck now in this race around the Sun. And Venus and Earth are pretty close together now. And that's one of the reasons that Venus is at its brightest in late April.
Anything else, Deborah?
No, the only thing is just look for Venus. And if you do see it, you might find that it looks very eerie. It's low in the western sky, getting lower every day in the western sky after sunset. And yet it's at its brightest now. So it's this very bright object low in the western sky. And around now is when lots of people will call up their local sheriff and police station and report Venus as a UFO.
It is not a UFO. It is the planet Venus.
That's right. And it's very eerie looking, and it's absolutely great to see. So take a look.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Burgess Meredith, Sleep Good, Bright Lights, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. Much hype and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end is there a fight. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't. Of the next stage. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know.